I just feel like I've been around the block, ripping up fantasy stock, working around the clock. Look at the view from the top. Researching rookies a lot? No, I just be listening to pods, yeah. One in particular, I'm just a messenger, let me just pass on the rock. Browning, Brunning, Bruning, pronouncing ain't what he's doing. What he's doing is not losing, but infusing you with new things. And there's Dennis the Bennett, yeah. The man is a menace, yeah. Building a dynasty, some of the finest things, promise you, you won't regret it. Sly as a fox, cultured in pop, give him his props. Here is a thought, here is a box, and you cannot compare them at all, so don't even try. Careful with the news, but when you use a take, I take up Tony Fire, I mean Dyer, because anyone else is a huge mistake. Whoa, fantasy round table, fantasy round table, yeah. Fantasy round table, come take a look at the crown, baby. Hey, fantasy round table, fantasy round table, woo. Fantasy round table, come take a look at the crown, baby. Go.
What is going on, everybody? I feel like I've already done this today. I am back, as is Matt Fox, and we've got Dennis with us on another special Tuesday episode here. We are going to talk about the Thanksgiving slate of games, obviously three games on Thanksgiving. We're going to talk about our thoughts on how the AFC and NFC playoff picture pans out, and then Dennis might leave as me and Matt start talking Mandalorian. I'm not sure if he's sticking around for that, but due to us not having a Thursday episode, we will discuss Mandalorian at the end of the episode. Dennis, Matt, how you guys doing today?
I am doing pretty good, all things considered. Done with work for the week and got me a nice long 5-day weekend. Well, we're off on Friday's a holiday, but I'm normally off on Fridays anyway. So I'm like, hey, dude, I'm just going to take Wednesday off. I got payroll done. I'm going to roll. He's like, all right, that should be fine. I'm like, okay, that's enough. I'm not talking to anybody else. Don't call. I won't answer.
It's the same for me. I'm a Sunday to Thursday employee. So Friday's my normal off day. So tomorrow is starts my two Thanksgiving holiday days. And I took PTO Monday and Tuesday. So it's good. I'm glad I didn't have to drive this morning, as I told Matt earlier. It went from 67 yesterday to 31 and a snowstorm this morning. I was like, oh, it's a good day just to sit inside and ponder life.
Yeah. It's always a good day to sit inside and ponder life. So.
No, I agree. You know, yeah, I got one more day, and then I'm going to feel just like you guys. One more day. Really half a day. I think I'm going to be done by like 10 o'clock in the morning and at home sleeping. So. Can I wait? It's going to be glorious. But we've got three games I think could all be fairly interesting for different reasons on Thanksgiving Day here. I mean, you know, just sitting around with the in-laws and you don't necessarily like the in-laws, any football is good football if it's going to keep you distracted. So let's start with the very first game on the docket, the 3-7 Houston Texans versus the 4-6 Detroit Lions. For the Texans, we know Randall Cobb is still out, and so is David Johnson. Watson, Fuller, and Cooks feel like solid starts here, but what are you guys doing with Duke Johnson?
So Detroit has given up they've given up the most fantasy points to running backs. But I mean, the challenge is that a lot of those fantasy points have come from receptions to running backs. They've given up 5 passing touchdowns to running backs. And as much as I want to say, well, Duke is a great pass catcher, because he is, that's just not what Deshaun Watson does. So I think Duke is going to get his 12 or 13 or 14 carries, and he's going to get 55 yards, maybe 60 yards, unless something crazy happens. But he's not going to get a J.D. McKissick-like workload in the backfield with the passing game. Yeah, he'll probably score more than he usually scores, but I'm certainly not slotting him in as a top 12. I like Duke. My initial pass at my rankings for this week, honestly, I've got him at RB 30.
Yeah.
It's he's one behind Kalen Garbage.
Did you guys see, speaking of Kalen, Eckler posted again that he's done everything except for take the field, which I thought meant
well,
a hopeful sign.
That will be changing. There is what was the exact wording I read? At some point in time this week,
designated
for return. He won't likely
probably
play
not
this
play
week.
This week. Yeah,
yeah, but he'll be designated.
He's probably back return. Next week.
He just likes to tease us on Instagram. I'm with you about Duke Johnson.
Oh, I was just going to say, I'm glad that I just traded Kalen Ballage, too. Kalen Ballage and David Montgomery for a first and Brandon Ayuk. So it's pretty happy. That's pretty happy to pull that off before Eckler came back. Yeah, to the Eckler owner. He needed to win this week. And his other running back was Adrian Peterson. And he was like, he had Debo and Ayuk. And here's the best part about it. I just wanted the first. I was like, well, I'll tell you what. I'll give you David Montgomery because you need a running back, and I'll give you a first. And I'd picked up Ballage off waivers the week before, and he's like, well, how about Ballage since I have Eckler as a throw-in? I'm like, I mean, I guess. He's like, well, how about I'll just send you Ayuk. I have both the – I'm like, okay. I mean, yeah, I guess if you want to throw him in there, whatever. And then I'm like, come on. Don't change your mind. So, yeah.
And luckily for you, it didn't get vetoed, which seems to happen to half of
you. There were a couple people who did veto it, but I don't think they realized what was going on at first. So,
I'm a Dennis on Duke Johnson. He's had a couple of matchups the last few weeks that seem like they'd be favorable for running backs, too. And we've just gotten nothing. I mean, that first game, when we were talking about it on Sunday morning, almost all of us that posted about Duke Johnson figured he'd get around 100 total yards. He got 14 carries for 54 yards, no catches. Last week, 6.5 points in what ended up being a pretty high scoring game against the Patriots, who've allowed teams to run over them. So he's on my bench. He's an RB3.
Yeah, I mean, we just kind of mentioned it, obviously, in the previous episode earlier today that we're just kind of fading Duke Johnson out at this point, and I am with both of you guys on that. With I will say, we talked about this some on Friday, Dennis, the getting back Walker in that secondary. The Washington secondary wasn't that bad the other day. Do you guys feel that both Fuller and Cooks are going to be good plays this weekend?
Against Detroit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean – that's what they do. And you know, Darren Fells has kind of been phased out a little bit, but Jordan Akins has come on, and Akins is the more athletic of those two tight ends. And then Pharaoh Brown, I think it is, has kind of stepped in, kind of jumped Fells in the pecking order. So they do like to go to their tight ends, and Cooks and Will Fuller are getting it done from the wide receiver standpoint. So, and then, you know, Kiki Kuti is the undertaker all of a sudden back out of nowhere, catching the touchdown pass with Cobb likely out. Cobb is out.
I think Stills is going to be out again too.
Yeah. Still, I was just looking. Yeah. Stills, he was limited today. You know, then that puts Kuki. Are we going to see the first active game for Isaiah Coulter? You know, that could be something. He's a receiver like they don't have, 6'3", 215, good speed. You know, while the others, they've got some guys that do a lot of good things. Generally, they're in the 6 foot and under range and not big dudes. So it might be, you know, he may be their fourth receiver this week.
Also, I mean, Detroit's secondary might be a little bit better, but last week they let Samuel and Moore and Anderson go over them, and I think we would all agree that Watson is a slightly better passer than P.J. Walker.
Yeah.
Schmidt.
All right, so let's go to the often infuriating Detroit Lions. We got some good news from DeAndre Swift right after me and Matt ended the podcast, thinking he probably had no shot to play Thursday. He had a limited practice today. So obviously that's still something you have to watch tomorrow. He's got to get in another practice tomorrow before they will release him out of concussion protocol. I would imagine it's still almost going to be a game time decision. But with as bad as Houston's been against the run, if DeAndre Swift is out of concussion protocol, I am playing him. For you guys, if he is out of concussion protocol, is he the one you're playing? If he isn't, are you leaning AP or Kerryon Johnson this week against, again, a very good matchup in Houston?
I think if Swift plays, he's going to be a smash start. Even if he splits time, he's just so dynamic and so explosive. So let's say they have 25 running back touches and Swift gets 11 of them and AP gets 9 and Kerryon Johnson gets 6. Yep. Swift is likely to triple the production of Johnson and Peterson. So it's you can't avoid playing him if you have him. It sucks that there's so many games on Thursday, because if something happens, you know, it may be hard to make up for. If Swift is out, honestly, I kind of like Kerryon Johnson. I think that the Peterson is a grinder. He's going to get you 2 or 3 yards, 4 yards, but they're likely only going to give him, even if Swift is out, Peterson's probably only going to get 10, 12 carries. So I like Kerryon Johnson as the more athletic of the two and to probably catch a few passes as well. So if Swift doesn't play, I'm probably not playing either one of them. But if I had to play one of them, I'd go with Johnson.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. You know, if Swift plays, I'm definitely playing him. If Swift doesn't play, I'm not playing either. They had a pretty favorable running back matchup with Carolina, who's been pretty generous to running backs. And I think Adrian Peterson managed 1.8 points and Kerryon managed 5.8 points. I'd rather take my chance. We don't have any buys this week. You know, this is the first week since week three where we have
buys in week 13.
I know, but we have all 32 teams active and available this week. So I feel like I have a better option than having to suit up Kerryon Johnson or Adrian Peterson on Thanksgiving Day. But maybe it's just me.
Yeah.
I mean, if I have no choice, I'm probably going carry on like Dennis. Adrian Peterson had that plush matchup last week and got you a whopping 1.8 points. So I don't think I'm going to jump back on the Adrian Peterson train and hope for the best there. So if I had to choose one of those two, I'm going carry on. Obviously, as I mentioned earlier today, I would love for Swift to be able to go. I could really use him in two teams pushing for the playoffs right now. The bad news, which is the guy we thought was trending toward playing, Kenny Golladay, downgraded to not practicing again today. So I think that really limits his shot of being able to play Thursday. Obviously, if he gets into practice tomorrow, they're saying he likely should be good to go. If not, what are you guys doing with these wide receivers? Is it just firing up Marvin Jones again?
Yeah, I think it is. Jones has been pretty productive as – so with there being 16 games this week, I'm probably reluctant to start Marvin Hall or take a shot on Marvin Hall or Amendola, who I think Amendola might be dinged up as he's questionable. Yeah,
he's questionable. He's perpetually questionable.
Yeah,
true.
And, you know, Quintez Cephas is their fourth receiver. Hall has flashed, and Stafford's not afraid to go there. But Marvin Jones, if with Golladay out, I think Marvin Jones is the only comfortable start at the wide receiver position for Detroit. You know, TJ Hockenson is going to be a top three tight end again. So for me, it's pretty much Stafford, Jones, and Hockenson if Swift is out.
Hockenson and Stafford still banged up too. I mean, Stafford has that thumb injury. You have to wonder if that was part of the poorer performance. And Hockenson was limited too. I think if Swift and Golladay don't play, the only one I'm starting is Hockenson. I am a firm believer that the magic of Detroit on Thanksgiving means that they're going to find a way to win. But it could be the Quintez Cephas 4-touchdown game that no one saw coming, or some other defensive shenanigans. Somebody's gonna score, some running back you didn't know existed, like last week when we saw Bo Scarborough running for Seattle and you're like, when did that happen? Detroit's gonna have some kind of magic like that that will win the game. I'm not betting on it for my fantasy lineup.
All right, so who are you guys picking to win this game?
I am taking Detroit.
Lions at home on Thanksgiving.
I'm taking the Texans. We talked about this earlier. I can't do it
anymore. Hey, look, I'm five.
I can't do it anymore.
I'm five picks back. I'm happy for you to surrender.
Hey, look, I mean, I'm, you know, that's what I do. It's what I did last year, too. Remember, I was doing so well, and then I just crumpled down toward the end. I went from being a, what's it called, really good to like a wet paper sack the last couple of weeks. I feel like that's continuing. I feel like I'm continuing to drop games here very quickly.
So you're like a picking version of the real life Ravens.
Yeah, there we go. Exactly. Oh, man, why'd you have to go Ratbirds? Could have gone like last year's Oakland Raiders. That at least made me feel a little bit better. Game two, the 3-7 Washington football team versus 3-7 Dallas Cowboys. You know, this is going to sound crazy, but actually massive game right here for both of these teams.
And could be one of the better games in the day.
Yeah, and a massive shot for one of these teams to possibly win this division. On
well, whoever wins it is going to be in first place. So,
yeah.
Good old Philly. McLaurin and Gibson are banged up. Both did not practice Monday. Washington at 3-7 is right in the hunt. McLaurin, Gibson, and McKissick all seem like good plays here. If they go, what do you expect out of them against this Cowboys defense?
Well, Gibson is going to, I think he'll play, but McKissick has taken over that passing down back role. You know, he's getting what, 10, 12, 700 targets a game. You know, Alex Smith loves him some JD McKissick. You know, you need to find you a woman that loves you like Alex Smith loves JD McKissick. That's for damn sure. But McKissick is, he's not been terribly productive with the touches. I think he's only averaging like 5 yards a reception or something, but he's still getting them. And, you know, each reception counts for a point. Gibson will be, the running back and have most of the carries. I think McLaurin plays. I just traded McLaurin away. I'm very melancholy. But I'm trying to. It's the league that I'm in that has the highest buy-in, and I'm like bottom half of the playoff teams, and I'm just trying to. I have Ebron as my tight end, and I needed to get a tight end, and so I've been dealing with this guy for 2 weeks negotiating, and I ended up sending. And now, granted, I'm super deep at wide receiver, like. We can start up to five, and I'm like eight deep at wide receiver. And I have Claypool, Deontay Johnson, and Eric Ebron. So I'm very Steelers heavy, which gets me a little skittish. Now, I wasn't able to get rid of in this league, it's like nobody will trade for Johnson or Claypool. They're all like, no, we don't think Ben's going to be there, so we don't want – you know, if you want to throw him in, I'm like, fuck that. I'm not throwing in Chase Claypool or Deontay Johnson. So I ended up – I traded Terry McLaurin and T. Higgins for Allen Robinson and Jonnu Smith and a second-round pick, maybe a third-round pick. I forget. But I got it. I mean, it was a fair deal. I like the deal. It hurt me to give up T. Higgins, and it hurt me to give up Terry McLaurin. Now, I still got Justin Jefferson and Chase Claypool out of this wide receiver class. So it's not, you know, I got DJ Moore and Kenny Galladay and Julio Jones and Deontay Johnson, Chase Claypool.
Kenny Galladay is the easy one for your bench because he doesn't actually play football anymore.
That is correct. Yeah. Just wait, though. Give him a couple more weeks. He'll be there for the stretch run.
So what you're saying is round about the time that you're pushing back from the table on Thanksgiving and you see Terry McLaurin catching his 15th pass for 175 yards and 4 touchdowns, you're going to need a double helping of the pie.
Well, I'm going to have the double helping of the pie anyways. I don't know if you've noticed, but I apparently like pie. At 100, you know, with 15 passes, the way McLaurin plays, that would be somewhere around 750 yards,
yeah.
Not 150 yards. So, you know, 150 yards is probably 5 catches.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think Terry's going to be good. I'm with you. I think Gibson and McLaren will play. I think they're probably giving them a little rest because of how important they are and the fact that they're actually in the midst of a competitive division race. Who knew? You go 3-7 your first 10, and you're right where you want to be.
Got them where we want them.
And you know what's the greatest? No matter which of those teams that I imagine will still finish under 500 wins the division, they'll be at home for their first playoff game. So yep. It's going to be exciting. I think this is going to be a good game. Alex Smith, he's not incredible, but he seems to have a poise and a not going to kill you vibe that Dwayne Haskins couldn't manage to muster. Dennis Haskins, Principal Belding, probably couldn't have mustered that either. But I think all three of those guys will be pretty good. And it's a soft matchup. The Cowboys defense looked, you know, did enough to win against the Vikings, but they still let Adam Thielen, Justin Jefferson, and Dalvin Cook run all over them.
Yeah, I'm kind of in on McLaurin. More McLaurin and Gibson than I am McKissick. While McKissick's been good the past couple weeks, he hasn't quite put up those numbers he did the first couple games with Alex Smith. So I would think it probably goes up a little bit going up against that bad Cowboys defense, but I think it's more Gibson and McLaurin for me. On the Cowboys side here, really the only big injury question is Greg the Leg, but he should be good to go. Cowboys looked good in beating the Vikings Sunday. Can Dalton rally this team to make a run in the NFC East? Zeke went over 100 yards. Will he keep it up? And Zeke, Lamb, and Cooper, are they all starts here for you guys?
Yes. I think, you know, Zeke is still running hard. The challenge has been the offensive line hasn't been great this year. And after they lost Dak, the offense has not had terrific balance either. There hasn't been that same downfield threat. But I think you fire up Zeke, even against a tough Washington defense. Him and Pollard, I think, will make some plays. But, I mean, if you got Zeke, unless you somehow manage to have, like, Cook and Aaron Jones, you know, you're going to start Zeke.
Yeah, there aren't 24 running backs that you prefer over Zeke. I also wonder, so the Cowboys line the last couple of weeks, they've gotten a couple of pieces back, which seems to have helped them. I also, if we recall, this first matchup against Washington was the one where they committed a savage act of murder on Andy Dalton, knocked him unconscious, and the Cowboys were heavily criticized for not showing much fire and not showing much care for their teammate. I wonder, they always get a little bump when they're playing at home on Thanksgiving. All the red-haired people in the audience, we're very sorry. I also, they get a little bit of bump playing at home on Thanksgiving anyway. I wonder if they don't come out a little bit hard and a little bit chippy to kind of a tone.
Go ahead, Dennis.
I would say, I don't know. You know, you have to be careful with the chippiness. I mean, the last thing you want to do is lose some of your top line players because they do something stupid, or they retaliate and they're the second one and they get seen.
I guess I more mean blowing off the ball and trying to road grade the front,
right,
for Washington.
All right. I'm with you guys. We just literally talked about it a couple hours ago. It was promising to see Zeke, Lamb, and Amari look the way that they did with Dalton being back. We had all kind of, me and Dennis had kind of mentioned on Friday that we thought Dalton and this team would look a little bit better, kind of getting that, getting the whole, like, bye week to kind of get more into the offense and everything with Dalton coming back. So
how about that shapeshifter catch that CeeDee Lamb made?
Oh, it was so good. I mentioned it earlier. Wow. I thought it was a catch of the year candidate, man. It was an amazing catch. I loved it. But then,
Had my own Dennis experience after trading CeeDee Lamb for fucking Calvin Ridley and watching the corpse of the Falcons offense on Sunday. I thought, well, that happened.
Yeah. So that means you only have, like, what, 7 shares of CD Lamb left?
I think I have more than that. I think I have, like, 10 or 15.
I am taking the Washington football team to win this game. Who are you guys picking?
I got Washington as well.
Give me the Cowboys. Picked them last week. Andy Dalton, I can't quit you.
Just like the Detroit Lions, you can't abandon ship now. Might as well just keep on going. All right, the last game of the day, at least up until this morning's news or yesterday's news, looked like it could be a good game here.
Tentative
for Baltimore.
Yeah, it's also this is the game that's most likely to possibly get punted.
That is true. I mean,
they have had per Mark Maskey 10 positive tests over the last few days. 5 players, 5 staff.
So I would say if they get a bunch more tomorrow, they probably will punt the game to Sunday.
Possibly. Yeah. Well, I know the last players that came in for Baltimore were, I don't want to say like players that don't matter, but they were players that don't matter. So 6-4 Baltimore Ravens at the 10-0 Pittsburgh Steelers. J.K. Dobbins and Mark Ingram are out.
With Hollywood COVID. Brown tested positive
for stucking. Yeah. Yeah, he did. Mark Andrews has been limited with a thigh injury, and as Dennis just mentioned, we've had more and more cases popping up for Baltimore. They closed their facility today. Assuming this game gets played, is Gus Edwards going to carry the load, and do you guys have any thoughts on the value for Justice Hill in this game?
Well, we know why Harbaugh wouldn't shake hands now, because he knew he was positive, right?
Yeah, that's probably why, yeah.
I don't know that Justice Hill has a lot of upside. I think he's going to get some passing game work just because Gus Edwards isn't terrific in the passing game. But it's going to end up being a game where Lamar Jackson is going to have to play his best game of the year. He's going to have to actually be able to hit the receivers. And I don't know, maybe – you know, they go back and look at some of last year's tape when Jackson was successful and they start doing some of that stuff because clearly they're not – if they are doing it, they're not doing it well. But it seems like getting Jackson out of the pocket you hate to say shut down half of the field, but if you're rolling right, you don't want him throwing all the way back across to the left side of the field. So – you know, flood one side, go 3 levels with him and let him pick who's open. And if nobody's open, run it. But get him out there on the move. I think Andrews is going to be fine. But we've seen Gus have some really explosive plays, some solid games. It wouldn't surprise me if Edwards went, 17 for 80. But I don't know that he's really going to catch many passes. I don't know. It's been amazing just how poor the connection between Jackson and Brown has been. I mean, Willie Snead had a 100-yard game.
What connection?
Yeah. Willie Snead, Dez Bryant, Miles Boykin, but no Hollywood Brown.
Yeah, I mean, I think Gus Edwards is probably going to be good for 23 carries for 61 yards and a touchdown to achieve his 12.1 points. Hill, if you were really desperate and had no options, he's somebody you probably get off the waiver wire that I imagine will have a few points. But they're not a huge passing to the running back team, which is part of the problem we've even seen with Dobbins, who we wanted to get more involved in pass catching. There's something fundamentally wrong with the Ravens. I don't think a short week with a batch of COVID and no practice is really going to correct that for them.
Yeah, I'm not really worried about Justice Hill at all and in making a big impact, which of course means he's going to get like 20 points on Thursday night. It's going to be ridiculous. But if you've got Gus Bus, I think I'm rolling Gus Edwards. I'm not expecting Baltimore to have a huge game here. Dez Bryant was the top receiver in week 11. Is he a decent pickup for you guys? And as redraft specifically, obviously we're not dropping him in dynasty leagues. Redraft specifically, is it time to get rid of Marquise Brown?
I don't know if I could, if it was time, but I guess it depends on your options. If you're looking at if you set your lineup and there's still one or two guys ahead of him that you're like, I'm definitely starting these guys over Brown as well, you know, then you're probably, it's probably safe to cut him in redraft, put him out there, let somebody else pick him up for his breakout game, which as soon as you cut him will invariably happen. But it's the passing game in general for Baltimore has been so inconsistent. I mean, they have, I just looked, they've only 44 pass attempts to the running backs, or 44 targets to the running backs. So I, like you said, I don't know that Justice Hill is going to save your day if, unless he can break one. But Hollywood Brown, man, it's, I don't know. I wasn't huge on him coming out of college, and I don't know that I roster him anywhere. I'd have to look. If I do, it's probably only one share across 22 teams, and it was probably because, oh, well, I don't have any of this guy on any of my teams. I might as well take a shot here. You're muted, Matt. Which I hate it when that happens.
Yeah, well, every week at some point. Yeah. We're pretty much past the bye week, so I think for me, especially in redraft, if you are in position to be in the playoffs, you pretty much did it without Hollywood Brown. And as I'm looking to build a playoff roster, I'm asking myself, is there ever a time when I'm in a must-win game that I'm going to feel good sticking him in there? And my answer right now is no, so I probably would jettison him. That would be the same reason I wouldn't be grabbing Dez Bryant unless I was totally desperate.
Yeah, I mean, a guy that I picked up off waivers last week in a redraft league, Michael Pittman Jr., he's still only rostered in about 30% of leagues. I'm dropping him for Pittman in a heartbeat. There's players that I think I'd drop him for. You know, we mentioned Damir Bird, Jacoby Myers, another. Who was the other one we talked about in the episode earlier? I can't remember now. It's Damir Bird and somebody else. Let me see if I mean, I can pull it up. I can go back. We just did it earlier. This shouldn't be too hard to find. There we go.
Look, I'm the old Dez guy that forgets shit.
Dez Bryant.
Yeah, we talked about Dez, but not. That's not somebody I'm running out to grab.
I'm dropping him out of spite. I don't even care if my opponent picks him up and then he goes off and beats me. I can't have Marquise Florida Man Brown on my team anymore. It's just not happening anymore.
Well, and another guy that we talked about, not a ton of people are rostering Corey Davis. You know, if he's there, I'd rather have him than Marquise Brown, because that's a passing offense that's at least looked functional at times.
Yes, I am with you. And, you know, had one positive, one negative test for Adam Thielen. That's not good. All right. For the Pittsburgh side here, Juju Smith-Schuster still dealing with the ankle injury. Deontay Johnson has been on a tear. Do you guys think that continues this week?
Yes.
I hope so.
Dude's good.
I think it continues.
I mean, that's why I couldn't believe it. I'm
like, the table for him all year.
I'm trying to trade him. I think I might have offered him straight up for Janu. And the guy's like, no, I'm not into the Pittsburgh receivers. I think Ben's gone after this year, and they're not all tied to Ben.
You don't got to date him, friend. You just put him in your lineup trying to win.
So here's the thing. I want Deontay Johnson, almost not quite the Corey Davis stigma, but it kind of goes back to what we were talking about with Nick in the first episode, Matt. Same thing with Corey Davis. Like, you can get Corey Davis for cheap, even though he's been highly productive all this year. People still look at him and say, nah, it's Corey Davis. He's not going to do anything. For whatever reason, people don't realize Deontay Johnson's been really good this year. They just think of, oh, well, he's injured all the time. Well, yeah, he was injured for like a 3-game window where he was beat up, kind of screwed you in 2 weeks because he got knocked out in the games early. But then after that, he's been just absolutely dominant down the stretch. So, I mean, I'm with you. I mean, I pretty much got him for Preston Williams straight up. I love Preston Williams, but if you're asking which one I need to have, it's Deontay Johnson, no doubt about it. So I hope so. I feel like because I need him to go off this week, though, he's going to get you like 5 points, and because I'm going to get crushed. I'm projected to lose right now 110 to 134 in a league that I need to win. So not thrilled about my chances in that game right now. It is what it is. You know, don't cry for me, Alabama, right? And that, and that how the saying goes.
Argentina, Alabama, Argentina, same whatever. Thing.
They're the same countries, right? Are you comfortable?
It's a different country.
It is. It is. I'm pretty sure it's part of a bigger one, but I could be wrong. Who knows? As I tell the program, guys, when I jump on there, I'm just here to breathe. I'm really not good at anything else. That's about what I'm good for. Are you guys comfortable starting Juju with the injury if they say that he's going to play?
You know, I think Juju has settled in as, you know, he's the third receiver there, and he's going to give you some blow-ups. But it all comes down to what are your options? I think that he's sort of wide receiver three with wide receiver two upside right now. So chances are you might have two better players to start, but he's likely going to at least end up in your flex spot.
I like Juju. If they say that he's playing in a rivalry game, I might be tempted to play him depending on what my options are. I personally am leaning more toward, I think they might sit him there 10-0. They're looking at going into the playoffs. He had that freak injury. It's a short week. I don't think that they have to press to play him. You know, they still have Claypool. They have Johnson. James Washington could come in. Ebron's there. They could always remember that they have James Conner and run the ball. So
that would help me a lot.
That would help so many of us. So, and I actually think on a short week against the Ravens, they are going to try to grind and run more anyway. So I wouldn't be surprised if he sits.
Well, my initial pass at the rankings, I've got Juju at 30. I feel like maybe moving him down.
Gotcha.
Maybe towards 36 or so.
Matt, you mentioned you think that that Pittsburgh might go more run heavy, and Connor, that means, could likely have a big game. Is that something you guys could see happening against a Ravens team that is more susceptible right now to the run with the injuries they've had on that defensive line?
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, Connor has showed himself to be, well, maybe not necessarily durable, but he's tough and he plays through injuries. He knows the difference between an injury and being just dinged up. He plays in pain. He's a solid player. I could see Connor getting, you know, 17 carries for 95 yards and a touchdown and, you know, one pass reception. You know, unfortunately for him, while he's kind of capable as a pass receiver, you know, some weeks it's like it's all James Connor, and other weeks it's all James Connor running the ball, but somebody else out of the backfield catching it. And those kind of screw you up when they do that, because you could really use those PPR points and yardage there.
Yeah, I feel like the biggest problem for James Conner the last couple of weeks has seemed to be him getting vultured at the goal line.
Goal line, but, Benny Snell?
And that's like his only carry. He just falls in the end zone. Yeah. When they played earlier this year, Conner scored a touchdown. He only played Baltimore one time last year, but in that game he scored a touchdown. I think he has done pretty well against the Ravens. And like you said, the Ravens have had trouble. I think especially on a short week, they may try to shorten the game, shorten the hits, and you do that by running it down, you know, running it down. And also in that kind of division rivalry, they like to out physical one another. And you would do that by kind of dominating the line of scrimmage and running.
All right. I am taking Pittsburgh. Are either one of you taking Baltimore to win this game?
Nope. Not me.
Nope. Pittsburgh.
All right. So that does it for the Thanksgiving games. Again, you guys can follow any of us, jump in our Discord. We will have rankings up tomorrow to help you guys with start sits if you need them. Again, just hit any of us up on Twitter. We can give you guys a link to that, or you can go to the website musiccitydriving.com for that. Playoff time. Let's talk about our playoff team. So right now, in the AFC, which is by far going to be the more fascinating conversation, I think. Bills are sitting at the current leaders of the AFC East at 7-3. Pittsburgh 10-0 in the North. Colts 7-3 in the South. Chiefs 9-1 in the West. The top wild cards right now: the Browns at 7-3, Titans at 7-3, and the Raiders at 6-4. With the Ravens and Dolphins at 6-4, just outside the playoff picture right now. Who wants to go first on giving what they think is going to finish out the season and what their playoff prediction is going to be?
I don't. What do you mean, finish out this season? I just.
So you're just doing your.
Don't give me. Yeah, don't give me the Super Bowl or anything like that. I'm not expecting you to go back all through that. Just like, who do you think's gonna? How do you think the final seven seeds will play out for the AFC? Who's all making the playoffs this year?
Well, I have the Steelers finishing as the one seed. Well, I don't expect them to go undefeated. I do expect them to win at least one more game than the Chiefs. Who I have at the two seed, the Bills 3, the Colts 4, Titans are the first wild card team, Browns 2nd, and Raiders take that brand new 7th spot in the playoffs.
Yeah, so for me it was a little bit tougher. I went through and played out the matchups. I think Pittsburgh ends up going 14-2. I also had Kansas City at 14-2, and apparently whatever tiebreakers it uses, it would put Kansas City on top on the kind of playoff projection site we use. So I flipped mine and have Kansas City as the one seed, which, remember, this year only the top seed gets a bye week. So kind of makes that race for number one a little more interesting. You know, in years past when you've had teams that were in one and two position that were close, sometimes they rested players anyway because it didn't really matter that much. Looking at matchups matters a lot more now. So I have Kansas City 1, Pittsburgh in at the 2 seed, Bills coming in at the 3 seed. I have the Titans winning the South and going the 4 seed, then 5th seed Raiders, 6th Browns, and 7th seed the Colts. I did not have the Ravens or Dolphins making a comeback into the playoff picture.
So riddle me this, Matt Man. If the Chiefs are going to be 14-2 per your estimation, and that they're already 3 games up on the Raiders, what's the incentive for them to play starters in week 17? Because if the Chiefs only lose one more game, the Raiders can't make up 3 games.
It's to get the one seed and to get the bye. Yeah,
to get the bye. Because that's what, I mean, like we talked about this in the last episode. I mean, a little bit different, but that was brought up with the Steelers, for instance. If, say, the Steelers are sitting there both tied at 1 and they have the one seed, what's their incentive to play in week 17 against Cleveland? Because they don't want the Browns to make the playoffs. You know, Big Ben damn well would love to go into Cleveland and knock them out of a playoff chance.
But also, the difference between the 1 and the 2 seed is much bigger.
No
than
bye.
It's ever been
because
of the bye week.
Yeah, that's you have to play after just talking about it.
Yeah, you have to play in the wild card round. So, you know, let's say we think the Colts are, you know, either Colts, Browns, or Raiders make the playoffs. Those are not easy teams to play. And if you went 14-2 and end up having to play them the first weekend, shoot, the Chiefs lost at home to the Raiders already. So we definitely know those kind of things are possible.
I don't think there's an easy team in the AFC regardless. We were talking about the NFC this way last year. It's definitely the AFC. The NFC is taking a little bit of a step back.
I feel like the Chiefs have 4 losable games on their schedule still. I think Tampa, Miami, New Orleans.
Oh, I don't think Tampa's losable.
And the Chargers.
I'm kind of with you on that. They're playing
in Tampa, and Tampa's defense is good. You know, and Brady is inconsistent,
Tampa's defense exists. That's as far as I'm going to go at this point in time.
For whatever reason, primetime Brady has not been good this year in primetime, and I imagine that game is going to get flexed. I actually think it already is the Sunday night game, but mine are pretty close to Matt's here. So I went back through and redid it. I do have the Steelers losing two games. I do think they'll lose to the Bills in a couple weeks, and I do have them losing to the Browns in week 17. That might be a little bit of a homer pick, but that's what evens it out with me for the Chiefs, because I actually do have the Chiefs losing the Chargers as well, because Justin Herbert almost got it done, and God damn it, I want my rookie of the year candidate to do something good. Well, to kind of steal that award. So I've got him winning that game.
I mean, but I agree with you. I think they lose to the Bills, but I think they're gonna I think they beat the Browns.
Well,
fuck, Matt. Not gonna be a happy Thanksgiving for him now.
Yeah, I know. Thanks a lot. Jeez. But with that, regardless if they end up tied in record, as Matt just mentioned, for whatever the reason is, I don't understand it, but the Chiefs do have that tiebreaker over them for some reason, so they would get the one seed. So the Chiefs end up becoming my one seed, which puts Pittsburgh as my two seed. They would get the Titans in the wild card game, who's my seven seed. Bills are my three seed. They would get the Browns, who are my six seed. And then the Colts, who are my four seed, would play the Raiders as the five seed, which I actually think would be fairly good games all around. I think that'd be a good weekend, which is actually very interesting because in our original picks, I'm pretty sure the Bills-Brown matchup was the one I had as well. The only difference was I had the Ravens in the playoffs, and they are not going to make it. And Dolphins will just miss out as well. I have the Ravens finishing at 10-6, but just missing out because of the Raiders finishing at 12-4, and the Titans finishing at 11-5, and the Dolphins coming in at 9-7, actually. So close, but no cigar for the Dolphins. I'll save these. So as we get closer to the thing, we'll see how close we were. And then obviously once the playoffs start, we'll actually pick our winners throughout. I don't want to do this again because I actually don't think we were that far off outside of all of us. I'm pretty sure having the Ravens in. And then I think the only big difference was me and Matt had the Broncos in, and Dennis, I know, had the Patriots. That's probably our one big miss, because I think everybody had the Ravens in there. So I think me and Matt having the Broncos in, Dennis having the Patriots, is probably our biggest miss on this list. Because those are the ones I saw that were pretty – well, I take that back. There's also one notable miss that Tony might rub our noses in. None of us had the Colts doing anything this year. So that's probably the one where – yeah. Our bad, Tony. Our bad. Phillip Rivers is a lot better than we thought he was going to be. All right, so moving on to the NFC. I'll do mine first. So on the NFC side here, I had the Saints.
Well, let's do
winning.
The current standings. Yeah, my bad. The Eagles are leading in the East at a pitiful
3-6-1. Yeah.
Look, a division championship is a division championship.
That's what I said on the last episode. That is very true. In 5 years, we won't remember that the Eagles won five games and won the championship or their division. It'll be they've won their division 3 years in a row a couple of years ago. So then the
Packers are on top of the North at 7-3. The Saints are actually the one seed currently in the South at 8-2. Rams currently the leaders in the West at 7-3. The current wild cards would be Seahawks 7-3, Buccaneers 7-4, Cardinals 6-4 in the hunt. And this is just the saddest in the hunt group ever. The Chicago Bears 5-5, the Minnesota Vikings 4-6, the Detroit Lions 4-6, the San Francisco 49ers 4-6, and the Cowboys, Giants, and Washington all 3-7. Basically, the entire NFC is in the hunt.
Yeah. Based on my picks that I was just messing with a minute ago, I have got the Saints ending up with the one seed, so they get the bye. My two seed is Seattle, who gets the seventh seed Rams. Three seed Green Bay, who gets the sixth seed Buccaneers, which Tom Brady never has made the playoffs as a wild card team. I found that out last night watching the game. He's always won his division, which I thought was pretty interesting. And then the big one, the one that I'm very curious to see how you guys have, my four seed being the Washington football team finishing 7-9 and making the playoffs against the Arizona Cardinals, who are the five seed.
All right, I'll go next. I had the Saints as a one seed, Seahawks winning the West as a two seed, Packers three seed winning the North. I have the Dallas Cowboys as the four seed, winning the sorry, NFC East. Top wild card, fifth seed Rams. So that'd be Rams at Cowboys. And then sixth seed Buccaneers, who would travel to play the Packers. And seventh seed Cardinals, who would go to the Seahawks, setting up the third showdown between those two teams that split Very two nice. Incredible games.
Yeah.
Well, I have Green Bay coming in number one on the Aaron Rodgers FU tour. And the Saints, you know, I think Breeze, he's going to be out at least two other games. I feel like I'm still not buying Taysom Hill. I mean, you guys can look at parse your stats all you want. All I keep seeing is that Emmanuel Sanders 15-yard underthrow completion that Sanders saved his behind on. I'm not buying Taysom Hill. I have the Rams coming in at three, winning the West, and the Washington football team at four, winning the NFC East. Seahawks are my first wild card team, followed by the Buccaneers, and then the Cardinals. I just feel like that the Washington football team, they have a good defense. Alex Smith is careful, and they have some explosive players.
Yeah.
And I just feel like that combination of cautious leadership, quarterback play, and a defensive line that makes the other two levels of the defense better. I just feel like there's an opportunity there for them to come in, you know, at 5-11 to be the champ of that division.
God, yeah.
5-11.
Oh, I know. Yeah, it's going to be, and that's again why this game matters so much this weekend or Thursday night. It's going to be, it's a huge step for whichever one of those teams wins that game.
Because if Washington does win that game, they will have swept the season series with Dallas, which would be a huge edge.
Yeah, a huge feather in their cap. All right. So is that it? Oh, picks. Go ahead and give the pick update.
All right. Well, also brace yourselves. If all you care about is football, we are very quickly going to be transitioning to the savior of 2020 entertainment, Baby Yoda. But in the picks challenge for our network competition, you are still out in front. You had a pretty good week last week. Have 104 correct. I am in second now with 99. I closed the gap on you a little bit, and I overtook my wife, which I doubt seriously is going to last. She's at 96. Dennis is at 92, and then Ricky at 82. In our Discord picks group, the big news, Justin's been chasing Rob for a while, finally moved past him last week, sitting at 108 correct picks. Rob now in second with 106. You are only four back at 104. I feel like your time is coming.
Maybe. We'll see. You know, I don't know. I'm, like I said, I feel like I'm going down like a wet paper sack here as of late. All right, so give a couple more minutes here, or a few more seconds in case you have not watched the newest episode. Dennis, I don't know if you want to be a part of this or not. I don't know if you're a big Mandalorian fan or not, so I'm not 100% sure.
I wouldn't say I'm not a fan. Uh-huh. What's it on? What platform?
Disney Plus. Disney
yeah, Plus. So I still have Disney Plus. I mean, I have Verizon, so I could have Disney Plus. I just, you know, I can only handle so many platforms of stuff. And with football, you know, between 15 to 20 hours of editing a week and doing rankings and doing the show and trying to not get divorced because I ignore my wife. Something's got to give. So we can talk Below Deck Mediterranean if you'd like.
I have no idea what that is. I will.
Oh, it's terrible. It makes me want to poke my eyes out, but my wife likes the show. So
I will tell you that most Mandalorian episodes are between 35 and 40 minutes. So it's not a huge commitment. But
yeah, I mean, I do get what Dennis is saying. That depends on the wife, because, you know, I'm lucky enough that my wife actually enjoys Mandalorian somewhat. So I do get time for that. And I'm lucky enough that she's never here for all this, because this would not be going on as much as it does if my wife did not work nights. So
I love my wife and she's fabulous. And I'm more than happy to sacrifice that time to watch the shows that make her happy.
Yeah, that's why I hear you.
I think she's right on the other. She's right on the other side of this wall listening. So I just needed to make sure that was clear.
That's why sometimes I'm following games on the phone and watching Hallmark on the TV with her.
Yeah, I get to watch a lot of Station 19, Grey's Anatomy, Good Doctor. I kind of like Grey's Anatomy, so I won't lie to you guys. I enjoy it.
You know,
I watch that one without my wife now. So
we watched probably the first 7 or 8 seasons of Grey's Anatomy, or 6 seasons. I don't forget how many. But for whatever reason,
they're on like 18 now. So
So it might have been close to 10 when Meredith's sister became more of the primary focus. That was when we kind of faded.
Hey, good news for you, they killed her, and I don't even feel bad that that's a spoiler because that was like 8 years ago.
Yeah, I would watch it without my wife, Matt, but she would literally kill me. So that would
happening. Nice to know that when Mandalorian ends, our Hot Stove Thursday can just switch over to Graceland Memorial.
Yeah, there we go. All right, so Mandalorian, let's talk it. We've given you guys kind of enough opportunity. If you don't want anything spoiled for you, you could bail. So episode 4, The Siege, we see the return to Navarro, not Tatooine, as I thought it was, because I did mess that up last week. For a more action-oriented episode, what did you think overall, Matt?
I mean, I thought it was really good. It was one of their most action-packed episodes. People know because I talked about it last year, we actually got to go to Disney to go on the new ride, Star Wars Rise of the Resistance. My friend Michelle, who's also been to Disney and gotten to go on Ride of the Resistance, we were talking about the action sequence at the end actually reminded me a little bit of the kind of way they have that ride set up with a drop and you're escaping from an Imperial base. It was a lot of fun. I thought it was a good episode. It was one of the all-time Baby Yoda episodes with his little segment in the beginning that was hilarious, his segment at the schoolhouse that was hilarious, and then especially with the TIE fighter scene at the end. It was really good. It was good to see Greef Karga and Cara Dune again. It was good to see the action on Navarro. And you get some little pieces of the ongoing plot, maybe a little bit of where they're going.
Yeah, it was good to see to Greef and Karga. I will say I'm a big fan of what's her name in real life?
Gina Carano. The actress that plays her.
Looks like she's put on a little weight. She's got a little thick. And she also looks like she's
she also was 40. A UFC champion, so she
yes, I know. Well, so that's the part that no.
Maybe when she returns, she's moving up in class. I don't know.
No. So here's what I mean. I'm not talking about fat. I'm talking about she's gotten thick and the fact that I wonder if, like,
quit while you're behind, man.
UFC. Let me finish. The UFC career, and her getting older has, like,
look.
She just didn't look like she was moving very well. She looked like she was struggling to move a little bit. That's all I was trying to say. I wonder if, like, the UFC beating on her body and everything in older age, like, she was not. Like, her running was not, like, sold very well to me as, like, actual running. That's all I was trying to say. Jeez. All right. So, anyway.
Gina Carano, if you're listening, always welcome on the show.
You are always welcome.
We'll wait for you to verbally beat down.
I'll send you my address. You can come, like, dismantle me with one hand. It's cool. I'd probably enjoy it, actually. So, man, I'm not going to lie. You're an attractive woman. I'd enjoy it. I love you, by the way, Paula. If you're watching this, you're probably not. So, anyway. The group does, as Matt mentioned, attack an Imperial base. The kind of cool thing you get to find out is you discover some scientific experiments. What is it that you think they're doing? It's definitely linked to Baby Yoda, as you find out from the transmission there that went to Moff Gideon.
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly we've noted before how the Empire and then especially the First Order looked a little Nazi-esque at times, and could have been some of the inspiration. This whole genetic modification experiments that they've got going on definitely felt a little bit like the Dr. Mengele experiments. It looked like they were definitely maybe trying to make a Jedi. It sounded like when they took his blood, they were trying to extract the midichlorians and give somebody Force ability, which didn't look like it took very well. So kind of curious if they're trying to make super soldiers, if they're trying to make their own kind of like dark Jedi. We already know Moff Gideon stole the Darksaber. So fancies himself a little bit in that realm. So that's going to be pretty interesting.
Yeah, that was my thoughts. When you find out that they were using, obviously, Baby Yoda's blood to kind of put in the son of a gun. Keep clicking on that. To put into those to the test subjects and everything, I wondered if that's what they were trying to do, is kind of create their own Jedis and maybe someone that they could try and control. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, because obviously you get another big kind of spoiler, which we'll talk about here toward the end. You kind of already mentioned this was an epic episode for Baby Yoda. What did you think of his arc, and what was your favorite moments in the episode?
My favorite was definitely when he was treating the TIE fighter fight like a roller coaster, complete with the ending when he, you know, when he vomits it all out. That's been some of the best memes of the week. But I thought they did a really great job using him well. That beginning sequence, I know you're a Guardians of the Galaxy fan, reminded me a little bit of Baby Groot with the, no, don't touch the button. Don't touch the button. And then he, you know, put it together. That was pretty fun. I thought the sequence in the class, you know, was a little bit of fan service, but it was also a lot of fun when he steals that kid's cookies.
Yeah, that was my favorite part, actually. Yeah, I love that he stole the cookies. That was probably my favorite part. Just the kid, like, just looking at him, and he's just holding them and just eating. That was my favorite part, but I did like the TIE fighter part as well. Before I get to the reveal part, because I do think this kind of plays into it as well. So you find out in the last couple seconds of the episode that one of the mechanics that was working on the Razor Crest when he landed at Navarro clearly works for the whatever they are at this point. It just the Imperials, whatever you want to call them, because they're not the First Order yet, obviously. Has put a tracker on the Razor Crest, and Moff Gideon now knows that he has Baby Yoda and where he's going. So that is likely leading towards some kind of final battle, or however you want to put it, between those two. But that also could lead into the next episode, which you showed me the other day. It's titled The Jedi, and it is written and directed by Dave, what's his last name?
Filoni.
Filoni. Okay, because I was going to be like Filani. So, all right. So, Dave Filoni, what are you expecting to see from this, and where do you think this season is leading in the back half now, as we are halfway through the season?
So, we had wondered last week, when are we going to see Ahsoka Tano? Because they teased out that's who he was going to find. We already know Ahsoka Tano got cast as Rosario Dawson in this season. But the fact this is Dave Filoni's episode that he wrote and directed, he's the one that gave us Clone Wars to kind of, you know, built Ahsoka Tano into canon, and the fact they're calling it the Jedi pretty well gives away that I think we see her at some point. Now, it could be the very end of the episode because they've done that plenty of times before, but I think we're going to see her. I think where it's building is obviously the Moff Gideon and the Empire is starting to come after them. You have to figure at some point in time, they're going to probably catch up. My wonder is if a lot of this season is, if this season has a very Empire Strikes Back kind of ending where they lose the child at the end, and next season is about, you've seen like the planting seeds, Cara Dune, are you going to go back and join the rebels? We talked about last week, the Empire, which they're very much calling themselves and acting and have the uniforms of the Empire that we thought was destroyed in Jedi, does not exist when you get to Force Awakens. It's transformed into the First Order, seems to be kind of a parallel but different organization. That gives them a lot of runway to potentially be rooting out the Empire. We've seen the Alliance, you know, we've seen TIE fighters, we've seen them kind of building and trying to patrol. Hey, are you going to come back and join? Mando obviously got close to those people. If Ahsoka Tano, you know, they find a Jedi, start pulling some people in. I'm wondering if next season is really a fight to destroy the Empire and get the child back.
That'd be awesome. I'm curious to see what happens as well. I kind of hope that they don't do the one thing where you just see, you know, his, hang on, what? Oh, sorry. I'm hoping it's not one of those things where you don't see her till the very end of the episode. Now, I'm sure they're not just going to kick the episode right off with you seeing her and kind of the whole episode, but I would think you're probably getting at least hopefully some of this episode and episode six with her and kind of them coming together. I do think that it's going to be a once he finds her, I don't think it's going to be an episode thing where you find her, whatever, and then it's kind of over with. I think it's going to be what you were just saying. It's going to there. She's going to be here the rest of the season because it's going to lead to some kind of final battle with Moff Gideon. And then what happens from there, I'd be curious to see if that's what they do, is if Baby Yoda does end up getting kidnapped and what they do. We already know they got renewed for season three. So as much as we love it, I would feel like they've got to advance the story in some way to where it's not just him and Baby Yoda traveling the galaxy together all the time. You've got to find something to kind of bring people in for a different kind of season three.
Well, and it would almost make sense a little bit to me based on his mission and everything when he finds Ahsoka Tano, who's another Jedi, that he maybe leaves the child with her, because his whole mission, you know, while we don't want to see him separated, has been he was tasked with returning the child. We know he felt some pull to join the other Mandalorians in their fight to secure Mandalore. So what if he feels like he completed his mission, he gives the child to a Jedi, and child ends up getting taken from there, and he gets pulled kind of back in? That would make sense kind of tonally with where the show's going too.
Yeah, so we've got, I mean, obviously, for most people, hopefully, you're off Friday, so that new episode drops Friday. I still won't get to watch it until Friday night because my wife has to work, so that kind of sucks. I'll have to make sure you don't send anything in the chat for a while because I can't talk about it. I won't be able to watch it till like 9 o'clock Friday night.
I don't usually send you spoilers.
Oh, I know. I know. Some people do. You don't, Ricky, if you're watching. Anyways, so yeah, I'm looking forward to it though. Can't wait. Obviously, for everybody, if you still stuck around, still see there's a few of you guys still watching, thank you guys so much. Enjoy your Thanksgivings. Hopefully you guys all are off of work, and even if you're not allowed to have family there, you can at least relax and enjoy at least one day, as 2020 has kind of kicked the shit out of all of us. So everybody try and enjoy your weekends if you can. Good luck in your fantasy matchups. We will be back probably earlier than usual on Friday, since I think all three of us are off, so might try and get in an early episode so we can all relax and enjoy the rest of our weekends. A lot of good college football games on Friday too, so I'll be excited to watch that. Outside of that, I'll talk to you gentlemen on Friday. Enjoy your Thanksgivings, and everybody else have a great day.
Prepare for glory. I don't know if you got your popcorn ready. Do you got your popcorn ready? I came out the womb, I was ready.
And he's hit the end zone for an unbelievable touchdown.
I would be honored if you played football for this team.
Throw it up above his head. They can't jump with me. Golly.
Only tackle him at the 40-yard line.
Who can make a play? I can. Who can make a play? I can.